Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Titans are out on the field for OTAs as we speak. We'll hear from Brian Callahan at 12:45, so we'll carry that press conference live and in its entirety. A little bit of a recap of day one of OTAs, what he saw, what he wanted to look for, and what we can look for moving forward as the Titans progress throughout the offseason program. We'll catch up with Tim Hasselbeck in 30 minutes. Been a whole lot of talk since the schedule release of, you know, expectations for the Titans. So we'll catch up with Tim Hasselbeck about all of that in 30 minutes. But happy Tuesday. Willie D.D. Mace are here. How are we doing?
Hey, doing wonderful. You know, there was, for it not to have been like a huge sports day yesterday, it really was.
It was at least a huge for me. Sports day yesterday.
You know, saw a little bit of the Edmonton and Vancouver game. I watched that for a bit. But before that, I watched the Suns and the Spark. No, it was the Suns
the
and
Sun.
Fever. Sun and
yeah.
Fever.
Sun,
sun
singular.
And Fevers.
Yeah.
Sun.
Not to confuse with the S-U-N, Phoenix Sun.
Not just S-O-N. One sun. Yeah, just one sun.
There's a lot of suns in Arizona.
And one fever.
But one sun and one fever.
Yeah, yeah, one fever. And that game came down to the last possession for the Sun, and they end up winning for the second time versus the Fever. And the Fever now is 0-4. And it just seems like I want to get into this quickly. Because I'm sitting here watching the game, and it was packed. They went over the numbers. They had 30-something thousand people over the last course of, because I think the arena holds maybe, I don't know, 17, somewhere around there. Their last two home games, the numbers have been like 30,000 for their two home games, which is huge. They said they didn't reach 30,000 until like eight games into the season last year. So for them to reach that feat in two home games is big, and we understand why, because of Caitlin Clark. But I'm watching.
Give Aaliyah Boston her due.
Yeah, and Aaliyah Boston, she's a bad mamma jamma, I tell you. She is good, boy. And that team, they have good players other than Caitlin Clark. They just can't win. Mm-hmm. They're 0-3, and they just can't win. But it just seemed like yesterday, for some reason, and maybe it was me, it seemed like the refs tried to keep the game close the last 3 or 2 minutes of the game.
The last 2 minutes of that game.
There were fouls that they were not calling. It was like, why are y'all not calling this foul? Like, clear. Exactly. But it was a good game. It was a really good game.
The NBA and now the WNBA, I think they've got to try to figure out ways to keep it moving a little bit faster. Too many stoppages with the reviews. Mm-hmm. In there now.
Yeah.
Like, there used to always be quite a bit because you save your timeouts, you advance the ball, you get your play in the huddle. That takes time. And now, on top of that, every other play is being reviewed.
Yeah.
Like, they
Somebody
reviewed.
Twirling their hands.
Right. Like last night in the closing seconds, you know, there's a big play where they run a pick and roll, and there's a classic.
A charge, yeah.
Is it a moving screen? Is it a foul on the guy, on the woman trying to bust the screen? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's basketball. Like, make the call and let's move on.
Live
like,
with
it's just,
it, yeah.
But they reviewed the call and they took 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It ended up
not
the
every call
being
needs
upheld.
To be reviewed.
Just
exactly.
Make the
yeah,
call.
Right. Just for it to be confirmed, essentially.
Yeah.
So it is frustrating. I've always said the longest event in sports is the final 2 minutes of a basketball game. Women's, college, NBA, doesn't matter. Mm-mm. It's infuriating.
It's too much.
Sometimes it's juicy. Like, sometimes it's good. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, oh, yes, please give me more of this game. I want this 2 minutes to last as long as possible. But on a school night,
we got to get this game needs to be over.
So
it turned out to be a good sport night for me, having, you know, watched that game. Obviously no NBA game was on last night. I think they start today, but watching the WNBA game and watching a bit of the hockey game, I thought that game was over with, and obviously it became a little bit more hairier as the third period went on. But I thought Edmonton had the game and stopped watching it.
Edmonton was playing like it was a game seven.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. So, but yeah, so it turned out to be a good sport night for me. And then we were, you know, going back and forth about Milwaukee Admirals. So I was able to follow them on Twitter and see a few moments of their game that they were posting.
Yeah, that was a good night for the Admirals. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, one that they really needed. They're going on the road for the next two games, and that's a tough environment Grand Rapids has. Mm-hmm. So it's like you don't want to go there down 0-2.
Yeah.
And they did indeed put Askarov back in there. And from what I'm told, I didn't get to see the game. I just followed it. It looked like there was a long stretch in the second period where they were in their own end a lot. The shots were kind of lopsided. So Askarov, when he needed to be, was really good. And he was named the first star of the game. So that is a really good response after having to hit the reset button. Right. I've been trying to talk to a lot of people that are, you know, more closely connected with the day-to-day stuff that's going on in Milwaukee. And they think that the timing was right. And obviously he was in the right frame of mind. If he could get hot, you know, this you talk about a big opportunity now going on the road, that could really up his stock. I think that next in the building blocks, in the big picture, this is a great challenge for him if he could lead them. And then the other story is Zach LaRue. He continues to be the man.
Yeah, he's playing lights out.
Just turned 21 years of age, and he's a colorful player of himself, you know, charismatic. He's that guy. He's got that little...
A lot of personality in Milwaukee.
Brad Marchand, Matthew Tkachuk, you know, just he's skilled to an extent, but also tries to get under your skin. We'll see what that looks like in the coming years, but there's a lot of hockey players like that. I think he's had that mark since they drafted him.
I wonder how... this will be my question whenever we get a chance to talk to C. Mason again. How do you sort of taper that as a coach or a veteran player when a young guy comes in with this bravado, this attitude? You don't want to take it away from him because that's a part of who he is. But also you want to, you know, put guardrails up so you keep it confined, you know?
It's kind of the same thing with Will Levis.
Yeah.
We've talked about
exactly.
Askarov. You don't want to take it out of them.
Exactly.
Because right? it's part of what makes
who
them
they
great.
Are, yeah.
Part of what makes them great. But it's also how do you channel it so it doesn't become a detriment as well.
Right. Like you've said, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. Mm-hmm. I think that applies to Askarov. I think that applies to Will Levis of, look, your toughness, your tenacity, your you know, staring at the barrel of a gun kind of mentality is what makes you you. But it also is what can get you in a whole lot of sticky situations.
And with Zach LaRue, he scored a huge goal last night, a shorthanded goal when they really were kind of up against the wall a little bit. They were leading, but... Grand Rapids was pushing. They had the power play. He scores a goal, and then he gets called for unsportsmanlike conduct for, I guess, taunting the goalie. But that is something that I think might even be reputation built now. A lot of people were just saying, what did he do? Did he say anything? With magic words? What was it? But I think when you have a reputation, the refs are looking for that kind of stuff. So that's part of what goes along with that as well. He's had multiple suspensions. You know, he's crossed the line a few times. But you like it if he can channel it, right? You want him that competitive edge, but you don't want to go over the line.
Right, exactly. So we'll continue to get into all of that, what we saw from Askarov, what we saw from Edmonton-Vancouver last night. Edmonton wins it in Game 7. They will take on the Dallas Stars in the Western Conference Final. One thing that I do want to get into is how much do Predators fans care about that? How much were Predators fans like hate watching that series because they wanted to see Vancouver lose? How much were they cheering for Vancouver because they could justify it by saying, well, if Vancouver goes on to the Western Conference Final and takes down the big bad Oilers, then maybe that looks a little bit better for the Predators. We'll get into that. We'll kind of analyze the rosters and the team construction of the four teams that are left in the Stanley Cup playoffs and kind of compare that to the Predators of which team is maybe the most replicable for the Predators to get to that point to being Stanley Cup contenders. We will get into all of that. But today is day one of Titans OTAs. We'll hear from Brian Callahan in about an hour and a half, so we'll carry his press conference live and in its entirety. But we heard from Brian Callahan on Bussin' with the Boys. Mm-hmm. It was dropped this morning. They recorded it a few days ago, but it was dropped this morning. One thing that I always appreciate about Bussin' with the Boys, whether it's players, whether it's coaches, it's in such a lax environment that I feel like you get a little bit more of candid answers. Like, you're just talking with a couple of friends, a couple of buddies, versus we're in a professional setting, I'm at a podium or I'm speaking to a reporter. It just feels a little bit different. It feels like whoever's on the podcast can let their hair down a little bit. And that's just kind of a general statement with the podcast. You might get a little bit more candid answers. But one question that we've been asking ourselves, Titans fans, you've been asking yourselves, it's a question that we cannot answer because there are so many moving parts and so many new parts, but fair expectations for the Titans. Like, it feels like every year we have an idea of, okay, this is a 10-win team. This is not a very good team. 6 or 7 wins feels right. You know, I don't think that any of us view this Titans team as a Super Bowl contender. But even if I say that the Titans could be an 8 or 9-win team this year, I don't even really feel that great about that. Could they be better? Sure. Could they be worse? Absolutely. So fair expectations for the Titans, it's kind of hard to put your finger on it. But what about Brian Callahan? What about the expectations that he has for himself as a first-time head coach and a first-time play caller? What about, you know, this? And what kind of faith does he have in this coaching staff? Of course, you know, Nick Coles as a first-time offensive coordinator, Denard Wilson as a first-time defensive coordinator. They've put a lot of pieces together on this team. Like you said, D-Mace, yesterday, you don't trade for L'Jarius Sneed and sign Calvin Ridley to win 6 games.
Yeah.
So what are Brian Callahan's expectations? He was on with Bussin' with the Boys that was released this morning, and this was his response.
Hearing you talk about the Bengals and how you guys established your offense, mm-hmm. gets me fired up for the Titans, because you're seeing how you view the field, how you feel you need guys to win and press mm-hmm. one-on-one coverage, and you're getting all these athletes in there. All you have so much talent on the offensive side of the ball now. Like, what's the expectation we should be having for the Titans? Are we winning it all this year? Is this it?
I tell our guys.
Can I tell
the
Jack
time.
And Garrett back there, who've been Titans fans since the inception of Tennessee, that we're going to win the Super Bowl?
I tell our guys all the time that we don't make any predictions or promises. So I certainly can't step out here and
that's good media.
And say
that's good media
anything
right
other
there.
Than that. I will say this though. I am excited about what we've done. The players we've added. I think they're all, you know, we added with Calvin Ridley and Tyler Boyd and D-Hop coming back and Tony Pollard mixing him with Tajay Spears. And you get a chance to draft J.C. Latham, and you got year two for Peter Skoronski. And now you go sign Lloyd Cushenberry at the center. Like, I feel like there's some really exciting pieces that, you know, if we can put it all together, I think we have a chance. And obviously I believe in Will Levis. It's a large reason why I took the job, is that I think he's capable of being a really good player, and he has not disappointed so far in the offseason program. He's fantastic, does everything you ask the way you want it, and I'm excited to see what we have. I'll leave it at that. I think mm-hmm. we can put together a competitive football team.
So again, that was Brian Callahan on Bussin' with the Boys. It was released this morning. He starts off with the professional answer, right? Like the PR answer of, I never want to get into specifics of exactly what our expectations are. But Brian Callahan starts highlighting, hey, really like DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley and the addition of Tony Pollard with Tajay Spears in the backfield. Reasons for optimism and things that we've looked at as, you know, potential upgrades. Potentially, we don't know for certain, but could be potential upgrades for this team. But what I think is interesting is Brian Callahan brings up Will Levis, that he believes in Will Levis. And Brian Callahan said it's a big reason why he took the job.
Yeah, I mean, as a first-time head coach in this league, even though, you know, everybody covets these jobs because there are only 32 of them, you got to be strategic in what job you take, because that can be your first and last job.
And last job.
Exactly. So you got to be strategic in what job you take. You got to assess the roster, the management. And more importantly, you got to know your quarterback. You got to believe in your quarterback, or you got to believe that you're in a position to take a quarterback that can be a franchise quarterback for you. I'm not sure Brian would have taken the job had there not been a quarterback in place. If this was a unknown, or if it was a older quarterback that was sort of getting ready to sort of on a down slope of his career, and really they didn't have no direction at that position, I'm not sure.
Will Levis was a total and complete scrub, and then the Titans would have took it
unless they could have moved up, you know, unless the Titans were in the top four or five. Then, okay, I take the job because I get to pick my quarterback. Yeah, you take Bo Nix. yeah. But you take the job because you believe in an organization. It's three things. You believe in you and how your coaching style, and you believe you can get the job done. That's first and foremost. But then secondly, you know, you believe in the organization and where they're headed. But most importantly, you believe in a quarterback. And it seems like Coach Callahan believes in Will Levis. So you take the job. So it's going to be an uphill battle, I think. But it's a battle that I think they're equipped to fight. You brought in veteran guys. He named them off. And there's other clips in there that we'll get a chance to listen to. But he named off the veteran guys that they brought to this team. Like I said yesterday, you don't bring over Awuzie and Snead and say, oh, we're going to win six games. That's it. We want to win six or seven games. No, you bring in guys like that. You go get a Cushenberry. You go get a Ridley because you believe that you can win the AFC South with the guys that you have. And on paper, they look as if they are competitive in an AFC South that is getting better. It's a young division, but they're getting better. And I'm saying it's a younger division because I'm looking at the quarterbacks. All the quarterbacks are young. So this is a young division that's looking to get a lot better. So, you know, you take a job like this and, you know, you add the pieces that they added. I'm optimistic about this season. I said it yesterday. I'm just optimistic about what I believe they can do moving forward.
I'm not as optimistic as you guys are, or definitely you, D-Mace. I still am tempering expectations. I think that would be the smart move as much as I could publicly if I were Callahan, Carthon, and the Titans. And you don't have to say, look, we're going to lose. You don't ever say that. But you kind of say, look, I don't know what we're going to be. We've got a lot of new pieces. We've got a new coach. We've got new running backs. This is a new era. We'll see how it all shakes out. Because I still see a lot of question marks. I see pathways that they, if it all works out, that'll be great. But they've never played together. This is a lot of pieces that you're trying to fit together in a puzzle quickly. And I just don't know if it's fair to expect that in the first year. And I also said when Caroline and I talked about this on Friday, Brian Callahan, it was a prerequisite to buy in on Will Levis. So if he were casting doubts already after one day of OTAs, if I'm Amy Adams Strunk going, wait a minute, that's not good. So yeah. He has no choice. So I don't know if Levis is going to be able to hit in the second year the way he's going to need to. If they're really going to contend for the division. So I'm not expecting that. I just want to see positive things shaping up by the end of the season, even if it means they win about seven games, that's kind of where I am right now. Well, I'll reserve the right to make a prediction at the end of training camp like we always do. Mm-hmm. But as I sit here right now, I'm not going to freak out if they only win about seven games. As long as Levis is taking steps and I see the system, I see the culture that they're building moving in the right direction. Because this is a lot. This is brand new.
And to Brian Callahan's buy-in into Will Levis, I don't think that he would have taken the Titans job if he thought that Will Levis was doomed to fail. I don't think that the only reason why he took the job was because he just loved Will Levis. Like you said, D-Mace, there's 32 of these jobs. You don't get a whole lot of opportunities.
Yeah, you have to take it.
He at least has to have at least a little bit of buy-in into Will Levis. Yes. He at least has to be able to watch the film and say, you know what, I can work with this. Because he doesn't want to be stepping into his very first coaching opportunity and have it be short-lived because the quarterback is terrible and you lose games and then he ultimately gets fired for it. But I do think that what Brian Callahan is saying there, you know, he's talking about tempering expectations and all of the pieces that the Titans brought in the offseason, reasons for optimism. And he fairly quickly pivots to Will Levis. And what are the expectations for the season? Well, you know, we upgraded these positions, but the quarterback. And this is why I believe in the quarterback. This is why I'm really excited about the quarterback. He's saying what we know, that this season's expectations ebb and flow as Will Levis ebbs and flows. This team will be as good as Will Levis is. This team could be as bad as Will Levis is. We understand that. We understand that this is the Will Levis season. Let's put everything around Will Levis to see what we've got. Let's see if Will Levis can be a franchise quarterback. And Brian Callahan saying, look, I believe in Will Levis. He knows that this team will be as good as Will Levis is. It's all about the quarterback. And another thing I'll say, I don't think that Brian Callahan is blowing smoke about Will Levis.
No.
Because I don't think that he would be saying those things if it was all a total and complete lie.
But I think that's a mistake as a rookie coach to me. I would
as
not.
As far as what?
I wouldn't go out there and start singing his praises to raise the expectations anymore. I want to be the guy that at the end of the year, everybody thinks has overachieved with the group. There's so many things that can go wrong. Levis could struggle. They don't have much depth. We're talking about the new center and the new wide receiver. Well, guys get hurt. I mean, they've had horrible injury luck the last 3 years. Hopefully that'll be better. That would be one way that they could improve without even – you know, having anything else change, right? It's just maybe having a higher percentage of your starters for the season. That could equate to a lot more success.
It's a lot of luck.
For sure.
Yeah.
But at the end of the year, I don't want people to be disappointed if there's with the same results. If I put it out there that, oh, yeah, I love Levis. He's going to be really good. You're building expectations that I think is dangerous. I think there's going to be growing pains.
Well, I mean, there's going to be growing pains. I mean, that's inherent because you have, you know, essentially you're going to have at least four new starters, like four guys playing together for the first time on this offensive line. Hell, you're going to have all five, really.
It's the whole offense. Together. Yeah, the whole offense is new players trying to come together.
Yeah, so I understand.
In a new system. Everything is new. There's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, I understand from that standpoint, being cautious about, you know, where this team can potentially be because it's going to take a minute, just like the receivers. And I said this the other day. Listen, it's these three or four guys that they have, they're top four or five guys. On paper, it's great. But you don't play the game on paper. You play it on the field. And for them, they're going to need that time, that cohesiveness, that time to start to know each other within this offense. And it's not going to just happen, you know, with practice. It got to happen before practice. Right now, where they're building up that chemistry, when they go on their breaks, they're still building up that chemistry because they're throwing together because you don't have the time that you used to have. So this offense may start off a little slow. I anticipate it starting off a little slow, but I think once they all figure it out, around possibly game three or four, I think that's when you're going to start to see the true strides of this offense. Not that they're going to play bad football the first three or four games of the season, but you're going to see the hiccups of a new offense, a new play caller, new quarterback, essentially, a bunch of new receivers, new offensive line. Everything on this offense is new.
Yeah.
So it's going to take them time. So I understand the apprehension of, you know, man, I just want to wait and see it. And I get it, Willie.
The floor's low.
Yeah, it is. But I just look at this team as we all do with each of our teams, fans or analysts, you look at on paper, how do they look? Mm-hmm. And then, but you know on paper isn't giving you a true sense of what they're going to be, but it gives you a baseline. They got some good players. Titans winning got some good players. Okay. I look at this as a positive thing moving forward. Now those new players need to gel with the new head coach and the new quarterback.
And I also think, too, Brian Callahan isn't necessarily talking to us, but he knows that what he says is going to get back to Will Levis.
Yeah.
And I think at this point in the offseason, it's all about boosting the confidence of the young quarterback. So the young quarterback understands, we believe in you. That kind of thing matters. I mean, how old is Will Levis? 24, 25? 25 years old?
I think 25, Willie.
You got to stroke the egos of 25-year-olds now, especially one that had a very up and down rookie season. You want him to know that, hey, we believe in you. We want to set you up for success. I want to get Tim Hassel.
He's turning 25 in a month.
Okay.
Turning 25.
So this coming season will be age 25 season.
Okay. So, you know, I like the egos to be stroked a little bit. You're a young quarterback, 24-year-old quarterback.
I think there's a way to do it.
Not that Will Levis is popping in bussing with the boys on a nightly basis, but what Brian Callahan says gets back to him.
I agree. Everything gets back to him. There's no question.
Exactly.
I would be careful on how I put it out there. I still think I want to temper expectations. This is just how I would do it. Maybe this is the best way to go, but I don't want to put unfair expectations to where people are disappointed when he has growing pains. There's a lot to add. He's got so everything is new. New coordinator, new tailback, new wide receiver, mm-hmm. new offensive line, makeover to offensive line. That's a lot. It's a lot.
But I don't think, and you might feel differently, just in my opinion, mm-hmm. I don't think what Brian Callahan was, what he was saying there is, oh, well, I mean, MVP caliber season loading, Super Bowl loading. To me, it was just, look, I'm showing belief in this young quarterback. I believe in him.
Right. And that's how I see it.
But how much can you know after two practices and an OT? I mean, it's not – I want to know more. Let's just see what happens.
You can always believe in him.
I would be the
don't.
Let's see what happens guy if I'm Brian Callahan. It might be a little boring, but I think I would try to be boring when it comes to Will Levis. Analytical, but not cheerleader. Not yet.
I do want to get back into this conversation, but we will be joined by Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, coming up next. I want to get his thoughts on kind of how Brian Callahan is approaching the Will Levis narrative and the way he talks about Will Levis this offseason. So we'll catch up with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. I'm Brian Hasselbeck. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, the game in the Game Nashville app. The Tennessee Titans are out on the practice field for day one of OTAs today. We'll hear from head coach Brian Callahan at 12:45, so we will carry that live and in its entirety next hour. But joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck and, of course, the head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Tim, appreciate you for joining us. We were just reacting to some things that we heard from Brian Callahan on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast. And Brian Callahan's kind of done a media car wash over the last few weeks. He's been on several podcasts. He's obviously had media availabilities with the Titans. And in every single one, he talks about how impressed he is with Will Levis's work ethic, how excited he is to see, you know, what he's got in a game setting. And he said, you know, looks like he's got to not take some hits as much as he does, but essentially Brian Callahan has been giving Will Levis a stamp of approval. We were kind of going back and forth about this. Do you view that as Brian Callahan instilling confidence in his young quarterback, or should Brian Callahan kind of be tempering expectations since we don't really know what Will Levis is at the NFL level?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a part of, you know, building up what you have. I mean, I think when you are planning for him to be your guy, you know, there isn't really a path to get somebody else. So I think it can kind of be, you know, both things. And I don't know that tempering expectations, you know, that just may end up being received as, you know, you're not sure. So he's probably doing it the way that I would do it, which is, look, we feel really good about him. We think he's going to play great. We think we're going to coach him better. We think we're better around him. We think his last year of experience is really good for him. And so I think that's probably the right approach. And then if he doesn't play well, you know, you then say, yeah, we were kind of stuck with him. It didn't work out. I mean, don't say it that way, but stuck with him. It didn't work out. You know, we're going to address it in free agency of the draft, you know, when we're talking about those things a year from now.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, and we've been kind of talking about expectations for the Titans. It's kind of hard to put your finger on it, and it's easy to tell one way or another, either he is the guy or he's not the guy. If he's healthy the entire season and the Titans go 13-4 or 4-13, right? Like, it's two very different ends of the spectrum that would at least give you clarity moving forward of who is the guy. The Titans very well could go 9-8 or 8-9, right in the mucky middle where Will Levis looks great at times, makes mistakes at times. But what are some things that you view in young quarterbacks that, you know, you can take away from games, regardless of the final score, regardless of record, to say, okay, that guy's got it or that guy does not?
I think there are a few things. One, the leadership component, like how is he, you know, in the locker room, how is he received in the locker room, perceived in the locker room, that type of stuff. You know, how does he respond after a bad game? Like, what does he do the next week? Just like you can in games say, okay, like, what was his response after a critical error? Like, did he handle that well? I think you can also look at basically saying, like, all right, has he, like, some of these end of half situations, end of game situations, like, has he played well in those moments? Like, is there just enough evidence to say, like, oh yeah, all the building blocks are in place here? So you're right. Whether the record is 13-4 or 4-13, like, you can still evaluate all of those other elements. Now, how a quarterback plays at the end of the half or end of a game, or how a quarterback responds after a critical error, those oftentimes do have a pretty good impact on whether or not you win football games.
We talked with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach at the Innsworth Tigers. Now, Tim, we've talked extensively about this receiving core, mainly Treylon Burks. But for this young quarterback, how important is it to make sure that these veteran receivers are all happy? Is it more so up to the offensive coordinator or slash head coach or the quarterback? Because ultimately, I think that's what it's going to boil down to, where this young quarterback doesn't feel the pressure to throw it to one guy, you know, or throw it to this guy, or, you know, for instance, throw it to Ridley because they just, you know, paid him all this money, or throw it to D-Hop because he was in his offense last year. How does a coordinator or a head coach sort of smooth that out? Because it can get real intimidating for a young quarterback when you have three veteran guys like that on the field.
No, I think it's a great point. And I think the point about veteran guys is a great point. I mean, we talked last week about just the dynamic of, you know, receivers that are coming in that are veteran players that have played with accomplished quarterbacks, right? So they have an expectation of, you know, for what they've experienced. I think the number one thing a coordinator can do is say to come in and be like, look, the quarterback doesn't dictate where the ball goes. Coverage dictates where the ball goes. And so you just set that expectation of like, no, like he's not picking his, you know, it's not a popularity contest and he's just like picking this guy out. It's like, no. Like, yeah, we called this play, but the coverage dictates for the ball to go here. It's the quarterback's job to send the ball where coverage is dictating. And so I think that is, you know, how you address it to protect the quarterback. And then from the receiver perspective, to keep guys happy, yeah, that's on the play caller to say, all right, like, how do I put Ridley in a formationally in a spot where he's going to be the primary receiver and it's likely he'll get the ball? Or how do I, you know, formation or motion something so that, you know, I can probably dictate, like, I think the ball is likely to go to this spot. Like, that's the best you can do as a play caller. And I think the really good ones find ways to make sure that that happens, right? Like, that's how you can say, like, man, how'd Davante Adams have 17 catches? Didn't the defense know that they were going to try to get him the ball? It's like, yeah, they did. But the play caller did a great job of moving him around and getting him set up to be the guy that gets open.
Now, Tim, I look at this AFC South, well, the AFC in general. You know, there's a bunch of really good quarterbacks in the AFC. But I look at the AFC South and I see a group of quarterbacks that has the potential to be good. Some have shown they are. C.J. Stroud. Lawrence is sort of up and down with him. Richardson, we know that he got injured last year. Now, obviously, Will Levis. But this seems like a young young quarterback group that can pretty much carry the AFC South into being one of the better divisions in the National Football League. Do you see it that way?
I do. I mean, I do think that, look, Stroud is good. I think that there's should be optimism on Anthony Richardson. I think that, you know, Trevor Lawrence, I think, you know, people are kind of beating him up right now. Like, does he deserve a big contract and all that stuff? Like, look, he's the number one overall pick for a reason. He is a good player. Can he play better? Yeah, he can. But, like, look, he's going to get a new deal, and he probably deserves a new deal. And so, you know, I do think the trajectory of the quarterbacks in the division is something where I think it's very reasonable to say, look, there probably should be growth and upside for all four quarterbacks in the AFC South. I don't know that you could say that same exact thing for every other division. Like, Dak Prescott's probably not improving at this point. You know, Tua probably is what he is at this point. Aaron Rodgers is where he is in his career. You know, like, I think if you were to look around, you know, maybe the NFC North would be the other division where you could say, okay, all four quarterbacks probably are at a situation where they should be ascending players. But those might be the only two divisions in football where that's the case.
Mm. We talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Ensor Tigers. Now, of these three, three teams, which quarterback do you believe is under the most pressure? Buffalo, Miami, or Baltimore? So we're talking Josh Allen, Tua, and Jackson.
You know, I mean, just like from a player perspective.
Yeah, to get their team to that next level.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, I just would say, like, for Tua, like, you know, there's a good chance, like, you know, Tua's, like, those other guys are going to, you know, they're going to always be in the mix of being, like, some of the highest paid quarterbacks in the game, right? Like, Tua, I think a lot of people's mind has something to prove before, like, that's the case. So, you know, I would say there's more pressure in terms of that. But I would say this, like, there's going to come a point for Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson where you say, hey, man, like, you're really good, but until you beat the other guy, like, you're just a runner-up, right? I mean, and so, like, I don't think that Tua's even really there yet in terms of people feeling like that's the conversation. But Lamar Jackson needs to have great playoff games and beat the Kansas City Chiefs and get to the Super Bowl, and like he needs to do that. And Josh Allen the same way. And if they don't, you know, the conversation on those guys for sure is just going to be like, yeah, you're good, but. And look, there have been plenty of quarterbacks that have been in that spot. Peyton Manning was in that spot at one point. But, I think I think those guys are already there, even though they're pretty young players.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, again, trying to get a vision of this Titans team and the challenges for a second-year quarterback. I put the following together, right? You're coming off of a year and an era where you had Derrick Henry back there, and you knew you had an identity. We knew they can run the ball. You have to respect the fact that they can run the ball. So now that's new. New running back, new featured wide receiver, overhauled offensive line, new head coach, new coordinator, et cetera. And now you're a second-year quarterback. So we don't really know what they're going to do well. We know what they hope they're going to do well, but what's a reasonable time frame for how long it's going to take to put all the pieces together?
The key word there to me, Willie, is reasonable, right? Like, I think that when you look at, like, look what happened in Houston last year. So when you look at teams that have quick success and say, yep, 1 year, that'll do it. Like, I actually don't think that that's reasonable. Like, now, just because it happened somewhere else, you know, should it be the expectation? Like, it probably shouldn't be. Like, just it's unusual for that to happen. So I think it's a couple years. I mean, I really do. Now, in terms of identity, I think because of the track record of the coaches that we're talking about, I think they're going to be good at running the football, Derrick Henry or not, right? Like, I think that that is something that they're going to hang their hat on. They're going to coach it a tried and true way. They're going to invest and be patient in it because that's who they've always been as coaches. And so I think that in year one, you will see you'll see the proof of that. But like to say like, yeah, hey, look, it is clear the direction we're heading. I think it takes more than a year for that to happen. Now, is it, and from a reasonable expectation standpoint?
As I look ahead, you know, we're trying to, again, the question of the day seems with OTAs going on, there's always hope, really across the league, right? You're looking at a best case scenario for every team and looking about what that is going to be. How much do you try to gauge what you hear in camps around the league from OTAs? How real is that stuff? Or do you sort of take it with a grain of salt until you get further into the preseason?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were laughing about this last week. Like, you know, everybody's in the best shape of their life, right? And so, I think, like, to me, clearly that's a grain of salt, you know, comment when I hear that. But I will say, and I think there are things that you can glean from things that are happening outside of OTAs and mini camps and things like that, is that, you know, sometimes like a team will draft a player and then you'll get into, you know, a rookie mini camp, and then you get into some OTAs and you get into, you know, some of these workouts, and you realize, like, you know what, he's further away than we thought that he was. And so now we're going to go get a veteran at that position. Like, that is real. Like, and I just know that I can remember it happening where, you know, we draft a receiver in the, you know, rounds 2 through 4, and we go through a camp or we go through some things and we're like, ah, okay, like he's not ready. Like, this isn't it, at least not yet. And I think some of these things you can figure out, you know, rather quickly.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, appreciate you as always. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Cool. See you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. And that's a good question, because at this point, Willie, we are also starved for just football, for
right.
answers. Who looks good? Who doesn't look good? That maybe we... Not maybe, we absolutely do sometimes read too much into it. I'll remember last year at training camp, we were also enthralled by Arden Key, that Arden Key was flying around everywhere. He was getting after the quarterback. But what we soon realized was the offensive line just stunk. It wasn't as much about Arden Key. It was just about the fact that that the offensive line couldn't stop nosebleeds. Of course, taking things with a grain of salt and understanding that things are early, but with so many questions and so much newness with this team, take what we can get. Titans out on the practice field today for day one of OTAs. We'll hear from Brian Callahan in just under 1 hour. Coming up next, I want to get into your thoughts and reaction on what we heard from Brian Callahan at the Buzzin' with the Boys podcast, what we heard from Tim Hasselbeck, kind of the things that we can pick up on with Will Levis this season. What is in the DNA of a franchise quarterback? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Charlotte Knights at First Horizon Park. Pregame at 6:20 p.m., first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Caroline Willie, Dean Mays. Join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June 20th for the 615 Open. Make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. So sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com. Appreciate Tim Hasselbeck for joining us in the last segment. I want to get into your thoughts and reaction on what we heard from Brian Callahan on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast. And Brian Callahan was incredibly insightful. There were a ton of things that he touched on in the podcast that we'll continue to get to throughout the rest of the show. But he did touch on, you know, Taylor Lewan asked him, you know, what are fair expectations for this Titans team? Like, how much are you expecting? And of course, Brian Callahan's not going to say, we're going 17-0 and go to the Super Bowl. He was very, you know, apprehensive to give any sort of quantitative expectation for the team. That's smart. Why would we expect him to give him any sort of, you know, actual number? But he brought up Will Levis, about how much he believes in Will Levis. So I do want to get into some of your thoughts on that, unless we have some thoughts.
Let's go to the phones.
Let's get to the phones. Our phone lines are driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. One texter texts in and says, interesting question from D. Mace about the veteran wide receiver group. Do you think that that's a benefit for Will Levis, or do you think it could be too overwhelming for the young gun?
And you know, that's the question, and we don't know the answer yet. I'm sure those three guys, four guys, will do their part, and they will not make it difficult for Will Levis. But, you know, it's a highly competitive sport, and everybody's trying to help the team in their own way. And everybody wants to feel as if they are part of what's going on that particular Sunday, Monday, or Thursday when they play. So as the season goes, those are the things that the head coach and the offensive coordinator need to be mindful of, because that does have the potential to be intimidating to a young quarterback. Now, Will Levis may have the personality to say, listen, you know, I am the guy, I'm the leader, and, you know, I'm not showing any favors. I'm just going to give, like Tim said, I'm throwing the ball where the defense tells me to throw the ball. So I'm not going to, you know, pre-snap and think I'm throwing it to Calvin Ridley and Calvin Ridley only. No, I'm going to allow the defense to dictate what we do, because what I want to do as a young quarterback is to keep this offense moving. I don't want this offense to get stagnant. And sometimes it can get stagnant when you think as a young quarterback, I got to get that 12-year vet the ball. I got to give him the ball. I got him to give him the ball. Or I got to get this guy the ball because they just paid him $30-something million a year. That stuff weighs heavy on the young quarterback. So that's where Brian Callahan comes in as a head coach / offensive coordinator to sort of diffuse all of that.
And I go back to that clip on the sidelines of Will Levis just ripping into D-Hop last season. And although I think that he got some flack for that, I think he got some pushback for that of, look, rookie, okay, I'm a future Hall of Famer. That shows me, I don't think that Will Levis is going to tuck his tail between his legs just because he's out experienced by that entire.
But he can't get in this shouting match with the receivers.
That's another thing. He's got to know his place,
he's
too.
He's got to know, hey, listen, it's funny because Steve, sometimes he would just ignore me, you know, and walk away. And sometimes that is the best thing to do because a receiver, let him vent. Yeah,
let him vent.
He'll calm down, and then we can talk.
Strategy.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes that,
in a lot of walks,
and that's what Will
sometimes
has
that's
to,
the way you got to go. Yeah. Just let the person vent.
Let them say what they're going to say, and then you move on. Let then you address it. But that's what Will Levis is going to have to figure out, his leadership, how he leads this team. There's going to be moments where he just have to turn around and walk away from D-Hop. Or Ridley, or Boyd, and then come back and talk to him after they've calmed down a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Guys, I just got this, and so we have a little bit of breaking news that has come
what?
In. Yeah, on the Predators front.
Oh. It better not be UC.
It is not UC.
Okay.
But it is a pretty major trade here.
I was about to say.
The Predators are about to announce that they have traded Ryan McDonagh back to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Wow.
For a second round pick, and there's some other things in here. We'll get the details here in a moment, but this just hit me here. Ryan McDonagh back to Tampa Bay. Ryan McDonagh is about to turn 35. He's got 2 years left on his deal. That's around 6.7, I think, on the cap, if I've got that right. I have a lot of things running through my mind here.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan of Ryan McDonagh and his professionalism, but his age and his cap hit. And from what I'm told here, Tampa is taking the whole salary
That's good.
Of the full 2 years. This is not a salary retention move. So, wow. From both sides, right? From Tampa especially.
Do we know what the compensation is?
There's a second round pick coming back to Nashville, I'm told. We'll get the details. It's expected to be announced, I think, by the teams here very, very shortly. So,
is this a getting younger move?
I think absolutely. I think if you look at Luke Shen, Roman Josi, that would be three of your six at age 34 or higher next year. So I think Barry Trotz probably has some ideas of how to use that money on the defense corps to get a little younger. But we'll talk about this, I guess, going forward here.
It's a getting younger move, and it's a let's get a near $7 million contract off the books move, which I think is a massive part
it opens up a lot more, a lot of flexibility in an already flexible cap situation.
Where's that money going? That's one question that I have. So we will get into all of that. Breaking news, as Willie just reported, you heard it here first. The Predators are trading defenseman Ryan McDonagh back to the Tampa Bay Lightning for at least a second-round pick. So we'll get more information on exactly what the compensation is. But let's go through all of the questions that we have. What does this mean for the defense corps? What does this mean for that $6.7 million now freed up from Ryan McDonagh's contract? What does that mean for the direction of this team? All questions that we have that we will address coming up next. Your reaction, Ryan McDonagh traded back to the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll get to you on this coming up next as well. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.